The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is up, guys? You're listening to the HSP SmackDown Review on the Unofficial WWE Podcast. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berga. Yeah, I said your name actually this time.
Yes, sir.
For the last episode. And we are from the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Another week in the books, trendsetter. Four in a row here reviewing SmackDown. What is going on, trendsetter? How you doing? You all right? Summertime. Can't wait. Excited for the... what lies ahead of us, but how you doing?
Well, I'm excited that you actually mentioned I have a full name. I'm not just known as the trendsetter guy.
Yeah, I know. I heard
I'm
our
not,
show
I'm not
back.
Like The Rock.
I heard our show back last week.
Yesterday.
And I just called you the trendsetter. And
yes.
I was like, my bad. So I made sure that this week I introduced you by your full name. So, but I like calling you trendsetter, though.
I think it's just a nickname that sticks with Jeff. But I'm not against it, but I do have a name, guys, if you're wondering. But no, excited, man. You know, because, you know, the theme song goes, "Are you ready for a good time, Jeff?" And got to be honest, the last couple of weeks haven't been a good time watching SmackDown. But the one thing I mainly wanted to see, the one thing that was building up towards this very moment that we're talking about right now, was the finals of the Intercontinental Championship match between Daniel Bryan, the liar Daniel Bryan, and AJ Styles. You know, the hypocrite Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, and what an amazing match. But before we got into that, it started off basically...
Well, I don't want to even get to that, trendsetter, because we got to get to the main news here. And we'll get to this show in just a few minutes, but, we got to address the situation where now Bruce Pritchard now will be overseeing Raw and SmackDown. So Paul Heyman has been removed from his duties as executive director of Raw.
He lasted longer than Eric Bischoff did.
He did. And Bruce Pritchard now will oversee both shows. And it's just, to me, amazing how the WWE falls back to, like, let's go back with the old. Nothing against Bruce Pritchard, man. And, you know, we like Bruce Pritchard. We met him at one of those meet and greets back in SummerSlam, I think, four years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see where he's come up from being let go by WWE, kind of having that resurgence with the podcast, having something to wrestle with on the WWE Network, becoming hired again with the company, overseeing SmackDown, and now all the shows, Raw and SmackDown. What a quick career change it's been for Bruce Pritchard in WWE.
It definitely has been, and you know, huge credit goes to him for being able to take advantage of those opportunities. The podcast, I feel, had a lot to do with it because people were just kind of, they knew Bruce but didn't know him in terms of the stories he had, and it's just really amazing. And, you know, even talking to him when we did during those times during SummerSlam, which was probably about 3 years ago, had a lot of funny ideas and a lot of funny, witty things to think about, but... this is unfortunately, I mean, again, congratulations goes on to Bruce for doing that, but to now oversee Raw and SmackDown, that's a lot to have one person overlook as opposed to separate into two individual people like Paul and Eric Bischoff, who lasts about a day and a half or so. So a lot of the pressure now lies on him. But my biggest thing has always been this, Jeff. When it fails, you know, is it really the person running it that's failing, or is the person behind everything too? I mean, honestly, how many more cooks can you have in the kitchen if the recipe isn't all that good?
Well, we know the one cook is Vince, okay?
Yeah,
and everyone else is like sous chefs and everything. And I just think this is all impatience. I just believe that the ratings have slipped on Raw, and I think that, you know, while Paul Heyman had great ideas and was pushing a lot of talents, I just believe that with the whole pandemic situation and just for whatever reason with the ratings now, they went low. They went down, and Vince, I think there's another panic move, just the way when Fox was when the ratings, and there was questions about the whole start when Fox and SmackDown joined up, and there was like a slight bit of ratings fall there. Who was the fall guy? Eric Bischoff. And now Paul Heyman, who oversaw, like you said, longer than Eric Bischoff did on Raw, you know, his time was up. And it's just, to me, a Vince panic move, and it's just going back to the old. And again, this has nothing to do with Bruce Pritchard. Congratulations to him. Kudos to him, because you would love to see people succeed. But a lot of people are going to say that this is a panic move by the WWE. And for one guy to oversee everything, one guy that could do it is Bruce. But still, it's a lot for one man, you know, a lot to do here on Raw and SmackDown. So we're going to see. Has SmackDown been the flagship? Has it been a better show sometimes than Raw? Maybe. But, I mean, you can't – I mean, the ratings on SmackDown and Raw, trust me, folks, Fox does – as much as they're really supporting SmackDown, they didn't even think the ratings were going to be like this, man. I mean, it's just, to me, all in all, the pandemic, you know, the lack of pushing wrestlers, making them top stars, it's really hurting WWE. And you can talk about the John Cena's, how much you hated them. You can talk about the Roman Reigns and how much you hated them being pushed. They were lightning rods. They got people talking. And with Roman Reigns out for as long as the pandemic is, and with John Cena now heading into the Hollywood aspect of his career, you know, they again need to make stars. And, you know, bringing part-timers in, this is where it doesn't help out, because, you know, you got part-timers in, they do their job, and then they leave. And now you're stuck with, how do we make these guys stars? You've got a great group of wrestlers on Raw, and on SmackDown you got the same thing, but you got to give them the time, and you got to take some lumps. Vince McMahon, when they first started this brand split trendsetter, he said in the very beginning, if you look at Ruthless Aggression, the ratings are gonna suffer, right? But you got to make that star. And that is the main thing the last maybe 5 years or so that they have not been able to make that next top star.
That's definitely true, man, because the difficulty here is, when we were talking about, you just mentioned the Ruthless Aggression era, it's like, when you look at SmackDown and Raw, especially let's focus on SmackDown here, their roster's good. I mean, there's a reason why they traded, quote-unquote, AJ Styles from Raw to SmackDown for future considerations. They need more star power, because the roster is very limited with certain people there because of this pandemic. But my biggest thing is, even prior to it, you had the first show that was on Fox. They hit it on all cylinders, really exciting, first time on Fox, and this huge movement of change, supposedly, and then it kind of just suffered from there. I think what's been dwindling more than anything is something that you and I consistently have been talking about since the first episode we did here. You know, storylines are going to go back and forth. It's not going to be for everybody. Certain people are not going to like everything you do, and I'll be the first to admit, sometimes I'll be like, can we just end this whole story, move on to something else? But sometimes you have to see it through. My biggest gripe with creative, if per se, or just the writing, or whoever kind of foresees all of this, is that the storylines have to go all the way, and they have to be different. So many times, and we'll dive into it in this episode, so many times you see things recycled over and over again.
That is going to be the main.
And it's like, come on, guys. There's just so much more stuff out there to use. Why do we have to go back? It's like, guys, when you have the same gripe of watching a movie and it's been remade, come on. There's a reason why it was done at that time. You're not going to have lightning strike the same place twice. Sometimes it does, but in this case it doesn't. So come on, let's have some new material here, something that's more invested in terms of the same quotes I use. From an audience standpoint, that you can look at it, be invested into the storyline, be emotionally connected to what's going on, and whether you're not, you move on to something else, but they have to see it all the way through. Unfortunately, you don't see it nowadays. They go 1 week here, then they completely – the same grip I had with Daniel Bryan. I'm like, guys, let's not forget what he did. We're not completely ignorant here. We know how he was prior to his match with AJ Styles. So then when there's a whole reel on Daniel Bryan wanting to be a fighting champion, come on, this guy cheated to win the WWE Championship. He basically, you know, defended it every so often, and now we're going to celebrate him as some type of workhorse hero type of guy. Come on, you know, let's not forget the past. So that's my biggest gripe when it comes to storylines, specifically on SmackDown, where, like, guys, let's see it all the way through here. And especially if you're going to give certain individuals the time which they haven't developed themselves to be stars initially. Like, look at Otis, for example. You have to give him time.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been just, you know, hitting all the marks with Otis. You know, he just got that happy-go-lucky persona. Some people like him, some people don't, because, again, he's got the girl, the beautiful girl on his side. So, you know,
he's got the money in the bank briefcase.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's got there the push right there, and it's obviously that, you know, WWE likes him, which is great, and they're pushing him. But to me, it's like they have so many toys, and, you know, on NXT, and you have on SmackDown, and then they and on Raw, and then they come up here, and, you know, you have all these resources, yet you're recycling, you know, bits and stuff like that, and it's just not really clicking. It's not anything that we can relate to anymore. It's something that we've already seen. If you're going to use something, you know, wait a couple of years. Wait 5 years before you recycle. It just seems like with the same, even with the same characters too, it's still the same stuff. So hopefully when, you know, and they've been teasing this, and of course in the show they had Matt Riddle, and, you know, finally he will make his debut next week. And there's a guy that you're concerned for, because there's thoughts that, you know, Vince, you know, not only is Matt Riddle going to be called up, also Donovan Dijakovic or something like that.
Yes.
And I know him as Dijak, okay, because, you know, I've watched him on the indie, so that's why I want to call him Donovan Dijak, right? So he's going to be going to Raw, and so you just wonder, okay, he's a big dude, but what are you going to do with the big dude, right? Mm-hmm. Matthew Riddle, whatever they're going to use him as, you know, can he live up to his full potential? These are independent wrestling toys, basically, that Triple H has collected, which they do a fine job on NXT. But when they come to SmackDown or Raw, they struggle. Why? Because Vince doesn't get them. Will Vince get Matt Riddle? After the whole Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, fiasco, and then Vince McMahon kind of maybe feeling that Riddle is, you know, booking feuds like on social media, which is a no-no in Vince's eyes. Like, is Matt Riddle going to succeed? Because if Matt Riddle succeeds, then you can build a star. And that's, I think, to Vince's detriment, is that if he doesn't get you, he'll cut your push just like that. And then, you know, you just become a spare part on a big SmackDown roster.
I could have said it better myself, Jeff. And talking about spare parts or recycling things per se, it's, you know, that's what happened in the opening segment of SmackDown, where you had Jeff Hardy and Sheamus do a contract signing. You've seen contract signings over and over again being done in the center of the ring. Okay, give you that. And then basically Sheamus, again, talking about, you know, the whole situation with Jeff Hardy's past and how, you know, he can't be trusted. Who knows he's going to pass a drug test, all this stuff.
He's a junkie, basically.
And then you have a curtain open and forcing Jeff Hardy to publicly humiliate himself in terms of apologizing for being a drug addict or being not a drug addict, an alcoholic, and him talking about his past again, which might make some people uncomfortable. And then you basically have him go behind a curtain to do a urine test. And what happens? We've seen this before several times. Last time it was with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon as they're building up to WrestleMania. Takes a piss in a cup. Really, there was a lot of piss there, and then throws into Sheamus's face. Ha ha ha. That's our sophomoric humor. That ha ha ha. God damn it, buddy. It's hilarious. And I mean, pee, that's what you get. Great. You know, and yeah, I mean, for most people who haven't seen WWE prior to then, probably wouldn't remember that stuff. Us being, you know, who we are, we do remember that. So it's like, you know,
I don't even remember that part. He did that?
Yeah, Shawn Michaels was on Raw.
I remember Jericho taking a piss in William Regal's teapot.
Yeah, or as Bruce Pritchard would say, don't say that word, a pee-pee.
Pee-pee.
Take a pee-pee in the cup. And it's been done before, but, you know, it brings some more humor there. You know, there's a fight that's breaking out. They're fighting all the way backstage. And to me, it's like, I don't know if you really need to go that route in order to get what you want. I mean, I was already kind of invested in the fact that here Sheamus trying to ruin Jeff Hardy, and Jeff Hardy just really starting to kind of deal with his past even more in terms of it coming back to haunt him. You had me there. Now when you do this, I don't know, Jeff, does that comedic humor that's been added onto it, does it kind of sour your wanting to see this rivalry, or is it kind of ruin the experience?
No, because to me, it's just trying to make that final push for the pay-per-view on Sunday.
Did you need
Sunday,
that
actually,
as a push?
It didn't bother me because I'm so numb to it. I expected something like that. Okay. Once I saw the curtain and I saw where it was going, I was like, okay, is this something that I'm going to like hold against for the matchup at Backlash this Sunday? No, I'm not really going to. I think I just become so numb to it that I expect some sophomore humor in these kind of things, just because it's them trying to maybe get a laugh out of stuff, or maybe trying to, you know, lighten things up. But I've already got to pass.
But what about the fact that they're recycling a previous storyline?
Yeah, man, this to me has CM Punk, Jeff Hardy, you know, circa whenever it happened. It reminds me of that. It reminds me of a little bit of Jericho and Punk. So, you know, we know that Jeff Hardy, you know, has had these demons, and he's had to battle them, and, you know, he has disappointed a lot of people, family, friends, and obviously his employer. So a lot of stuff here is brought into real life. You know, I thought maybe it was going to be better than, you know, how it's when it started with the whole, you know, the whole accident scene out there in the performance center. I mean, maybe the angle's been a crime, but I really think that I've just been numb to a trendsetter. Yeah. It really didn't turn me off or turn me into wanting to see this. I'm kind of like, you know what I'm digging, though? I'm digging Sheamus's mic work. He's very witty.
He's definitely improved.
Yeah, he's definitely got a persona about him. He should have the mic more often, probably in the near future. He's whether it's written for him or whether it's bullet points, I think he's done a good job pushing this thing. He's really been a dislikable, you know, character in this. But as far as like this whole thing, again, we know Vince's sophomoric humor. We knew he's going to be involved with this. We know it's involved with a couple weeks ago when we saw the whole slime coming down on Kyle Braxton and stuff. It's just. It is what it is, trendsetter, and you know, as a WWE fan, you become numb to it. You're a wrestling fan, you know this is what you're gonna get with the WWE. So, am I turned off or not? Ah, you know what, trendsetter, I am just numb to those things now.
Well, besides being numb to that, we moved on to tag team action between the New Day and Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, finally getting some TV time, those two individuals in the ring, and, you know, defeated the New Day clean. Was that, to me, that was kind of a surprise, because it was like, you're so used to having those heels kind of, you know, hold onto the ropes, yeah, or kind of poke somebody in the eye, or hit somebody in the groin to get that win.
Clean get the roll. Get the roll. Yeah. He did. He get the
clean
roll.
Wheel, I mean, which win wish... over the New Day. Yeah. Does this lead to maybe possibly, you know, that happening, you know, them getting a shot at the tag team titles?
Well, I pray that Nakamura and Cesaro, they do something with them, because, again, we're talking about talent. You got two guys right there that, again, whether Vince gets them or not, these are two people that
clearly
should be
he
your,
doesn't get
this
them.
Should be your foundation to any company that you have. I mean, if you gave me draft choices right now, they would be at the top. If I could just pick off the SmackDown roster, those two are there, and they're stuck in tag team limbo when they shouldn't be in tag team limbo. It's just a cop-out. Just like I think Morrison and The Miz was a cop-out of putting them together, because, hey, it's easy. It makes money. It works. Whatever, but can we get Morrison into a singles rivalry? Can we get Nakamura and Cesaro into a singles rivalry? What is the issue is that it's just an easy cop-out by creative. Hey, let's put these guys together who've been losing, you know, since Sami Zayn has not been there. They've been losing. They, you know, they get a surprising win, and now we're supposed to think that they're a strong tag team to maybe rival Kofi and Big E for a future championship matchup. Where's the Usos? Where the hell are they? Not that I need to see them in the New Day again, but where are they? I guess you got to bring people in and out because this whole pandemic, but, you know, Florida is like an ole of letting people go in and out as they please with this pandemic, so I don't see why the Usos aren't being used. You can make more tag teams. I know they've done, you know, Otis on his singles direction, so that's fine. But, like, I mean, to me, if you're going to build a foundation and you're complaining about ratings, why is Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura put together in a tag team that, honestly, if they should be put together, should be a dominant tag team? You know, I mean, it's like, oh, yay, they got the win, but are they just being pushed a little bit so that they can lose at a next pay-per-view to Big E and Kofi? You know what I mean? I know they love the New Day, and, you know, Matt, props to them, their protest at the beginning of their entrance and stuff, which is great. But, you know, like, it just, to me, it's confusing. I'm a huge fan of both guys, of Nakamura and of Cesaro. So it's just frustration coming out of my point, because, you know, again, you got a good guy like Paul Heyman getting the boot from being executive director, and you've got talent on that roster that Vince doesn't want to push, and then who ends up paying for it? Paul Heyman. He goes back to being the advocate of Brock Lesnar. So, I mean, I think it's just good guys losing out on their jobs because the main chef, as we're talking about on this show, doesn't want to play with those toys, doesn't want to add those recipes to his dish. And that's basically what it is. We're comparing here. We compare the ice cream thing. We compare everything. But, you know, the thing is just it comes up to one guy, and that's Vince McMahon. And you've got so much talent here. And to me, they're just toys in this thing that keep them from going to other companies. And that's what they've become. And, you know, that's as frustrated as I'm going to get with these two guys. Because
really? Because you're kind of frustrated right now.
Yeah, and I'm going in a tangent here. But, you know, you the fans know, you know, you wrestling fans know this, and I'm speaking for you guys here on the frustrations with those two guys, and hopefully it leads to a tag team title run, but again, who knows with these guys, and I just hope that they become a legitimate tag team.
Real quick, though, you brought up a good point, though, the whole situation with Cesaro and Sheamus. sorry, Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura, and then you mentioned Sami Zayn. You think when all this is over and Sami Zayn does decide to come back, that they'll bring that trio back together again, or you think that's kind of kiboshed now?
Oh, man. I mean, listen, I would expect the Sami Zayn to come back to that trio because, you know, I don't think they know what to do with Cesaro and Shinsuke apart. I think now they look at Shinsuke and Cesaro as tag team.
Yeah.
They've always looked at Cesaro as a tag team guy. I don't think they see him as a singles guy anymore. And I think Cesaro, they're making him complacent. And I think he's happy in that role, which I really would hope that he says he's frustrated. But, I mean, he's just become a tag team person. And you've seen Sheamus versus Cesaro in that best of seven. You've seen how good he's at singles. But I just don't think they believe in his
character. Well, there's no question that Cesaro is amazing in the ring.
Yeah. So, but I think they've just pegged him as a tag team guy, and I think Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be put in that same situation where he's going to be pegged into a tag team guy. And then with Sami Zayn being the mouthpiece, because we know Shinsuke has some tough times communicating, and since Cesaro,
well, there's a language barrier there, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, Sami Zayn most likely will be back.
Okay.
Well, and so, you know, I mean, which is sad to say that they're going to be put back together, because I think, again, individuals, you know, can be put in a lot of storylines, but they like putting people together. So one thing I do want to give kudos to WWE about Trendsetter is that Intercontinental title montage that they had. It was something that we talked about last week, that title meant something in the 80s and 90s. And you saw those names there. You saw the
minus Chris Jericho.
Minus Chris Jericho, of course, which they're not going to, of course, plug him on that show. But, you know, you saw the Mr. Perfects, the Bret Harts, the Shawn Michaels, you know, everybody, the Ricky Steamboats, everyone that's worn that title, they've been that next guy, they've been the future, you know, heavyweight champion, and it's been the workman's title. And whoever won this one, whoever won this match, you knew that, hey, you know, that they were going to make the title, right? So whether you think Daniel Bryan's hypocrite or AJ Styles is not going to...
Oh, it's not that I think he is.
So
storyline based, of course.
So, you know, that really was like, wow, I was so looking forward to this match. And I think they did a great job with that, and they did a good job promoting AJ and Daniel Bryan. It had a big-time feel.
It did have a big-time feel to it. But here's the thing, Jeff. You know, it's the old saying, right? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. How many times have they tried to, with montages, maybe not as good as this one, right, to kind of bring the importance, whether it's a montage or them talking about it, to talk about the significance, the relevancy, the prestige of what the Intercontinental Championship was.
Yeah.
Key word, Jeff, was. Mm-hmm. Because it was a title, like you mentioned before, and it's been mentioned several times before, the workhorse title, if you want to say it. The guy who was next in line to become the world champion was the belt that if you had that title, then you were next in line because they believed and thought something of you. But in all honesty, from all the great people they've put on that montage as Intercontinental Champion, Triple H, The Rock, you know, you have, Steamboats, the Perfect
Savages,
the Bret Harts, the Shawn Michaels. For as many good people as they put on there, and the weight, and they also showed the change in the title and what it looked like before and what it looks like now, in terms of if you like that look, great. If you don't, then, you know, just the way it goes. But I can't
forget. Do you like the look of the title?
I think it's nice. That's all right. I like the classic.
It looks good on AJ right now.
It looks great on AJ. We blew it. We just gave it away.
Well,
but
I mean,
I'm joking. No. But spoilers, guys. Don't listen to that. But no. You're right. It does look great on him. But you know, I'm an old school guy. I love the first ever version of the title. What it looked like. Just it was so much bigger than the actual world title. It made you think, man, this is really important. But for all those great people you mentioned, or I mentioned, I can't help but to see the other people that have won the Intercontinental title, and you're like, really? What's that about? So,
which one is it the most that bothers you?
Godfather. I don't know. I just keep thinking, like, Godfather was your
I hated
champion.
That. I hated
Road
that.
Dog was your Intercontinental
I hated
champion.
That incarnation of that belt. I hated it so much. It looked like a bracelet.
It did.
Oh, I hated
it. I think
so
it was
much.
Done on purpose because, like you mentioned before, like the original one was so much, looked so much. To me, I liked that one better than the Bald Eagle title. Although
bald
that's
eagle?
A classic.
Winged Eagle.
He's a bald eagle. Oh, winged eagle. Oh. I'm sorry. So for the winged eagle title. So, you know, well, same thing. It's an eagle.
No.
You look at me weird for some reason. But anyway, that looked more important to me from a visual standpoint. So I think when they did it, the bracelet look that you're talking about, I think they did it on purpose because they didn't want to look at it as nice as the the WWF Championship at that time, the new version of it, the one that Austin held for such a long period of time. So I think that was done on purpose. But then, you know, Cody, thank God for Cody, came in and wanted to bring back the old version. And that didn't look exactly the same. It still was smaller. So, you know, but it brought some history back. And now this new version of it, I think it's just a it draws your eye still. Look, this one draws your eye.
You people, you fans listening, the people listening to this are going to be like, oh, does this guy still think it's real, damn it? No. Here's the thing. It's a prop. I get it. It's in a sport where it's predetermined, guys. I get what you're talking about. But I've watched this since I was a kid. To me, it's my male soap opera, right? So when I think of that Intercontinental title and I think of people holding it and what it means, I get chills. I get goosebumps. If I ever held the actual Intercontinental title, you know, I would get, like, goosebumps. I would look at it, and the first thing I would think is, like, the history of it. Yes, it's corny. It's cheesy. But you know what? That's what the Intercontinental title is. And it's been so disrespected. It's been so, like, thrown to the wayside, where now the U.S. title, for some god reason, maybe in people's eyes, the second title in that company, yeah, besides the two world titles, right? I mean, give me a break, you know? So when I see those snippets and I see the montage of what the IC title used to be, man, you know, make it that way again. And hopefully, you know, once you get to this match and talk about it, you know, these, you know, AJ Styles or Daniel Bryan will make it relevant if they continue to feud. But before we get to that match, Trendsetter, let's talk about this. We talked about the word recycled, right? So, man, this... If you can't tell that Bayley is taking a lot from Chris Jericho, you're gonna see it in this championship friendship celebration that Sasha and Bayley had in front of the ring, where basically it's setting up their feud for Backlash, where they're gonna have a triple threat match with the Iconics and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. You know, I try not to poo-poo on things, but I'm gonna poo-poo on this, man.
You thought to use that word.
You talk about Jeff Hardy just splashing urine on Sheamus. I'm going to poo-poo this. I'm going to poo-poo all over this segment because It is, if they're not recycling the Chris Jericho Festival of Friendship here, I don't know what they're doing, because this to me was like, ugh. I'm like, you got to have something better than this.
No, yeah, Jeff literally walked out of the segment because he just couldn't take it anymore. You have to have something better than that. I mean, in terms of them trying to push Bayley as this obnoxious, I can't stand her type of character, congratulations, you've done that really well. Sasha's become kind of a mute. She says things every once in a while, but then she stands there and looks pretty. And no denying question like that. Sasha is stunning in that respect. But you're right. It's recycling from the standpoint that we've seen that from the Festival of Friendship, where Kevin Owens turned his back on Chris Jericho, and that started their feud. Maybe, again, planting the seed that this is eventually going to happen down the road.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the poems and, you know.
Yeah, the poems and stuff like that.
Not that they turned, but it just, like, in the beginning had that feel to, like, really, like, a friendship celebration.
Yeah, it had a friendship celebration feel to it. But the other point I was trying to make, too, what's been recycled is the mere fact that, you know, how many times, and hey, I'm a huge fan when it comes to matches where it's like, you know, the champion does not have to get pinned in order to lose, because it creates that level of, oh, wow, you never know what's going to happen. But how many times has there been triple threat matches gone on god-awfully? They used to mean something, but now, like, they just seem to be recycled just as much as anything, because you don't know what decision to make. At least for me, from my standpoint, it's kind of a decision like, we don't know what to do, so we're going to put three individuals that we think are kind of good, and we're going to put them together rather than just dedicate ourselves just to one storyline. And, you know, that's, to me, it's like you try to please everybody in a sense there. When it comes to the tag team division, hey, I'm pretty excited because, you know what, at least it brings some attention to tag team wrestling, which I've made it perfectly clear since the first episode I'm a huge fan of. I think that's where you establish stars, and that's how you create a roster in terms of seeing who the next person is to be an individual star. But the thing that upsets me the most, maybe it shouldn't so much too, because this has just been the classic scenario that WWE has done, right? I mean, they did this a lot with the Raw title with Becky Lynch, and now they're doing that with Bayley. It's like, it seems that that title, as much as they want to say, oh, they've held it for X amount of times, well, how many times have you actually defended it?
It just, on honestly, TV?
It's
honestly,
just, they're just numbers being thrown out there that don't mean any significance. It's not like the Honky Tonk Man, who held the Intercontinental title for 400 and something days. You know, he defended it a lot of times. But then when you look at this, like, okay, we're going to go into Backlash with this match for a triple threat match. because basically the segment went all chaotic, and, you know, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross came out, and then you had the Iconics on the screen, huge fight breaking out, the whole celebration was ruined. Okay, we knew that was going to happen. But the mere fact that the women's title is not going to be defended, I'm like, really? The reason why you have these championships, they don't trust anybody. Or more importantly, they don't know anybody else to put in that situation because they've run out of their talent pool. Granted, like I said, we're in a pandemic, but at the same time, what are we going to do? Put Naomi back in there again? Put Lacey Evans back in there? I mean, come on. How many times?
Haven't been Tamina Snuka.
Yeah, haven't been Tamina had her opportunity as well. It's like, all right, you've done all that now, so like, what else is left? So, you know, we're not going to have the title defended. It's like a throwaway pay per view for them.
Honestly, you look at it. Unless we didn't have to like review this stuff, I could watch it maybe next week. I don't really have to be tuned in for the show on Sunday.
The pay per view was what we're going to talk about, the Intercontinental title final match. But yeah, that's what it felt like to me too.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, again, like we're not going to hear
shaking his head.
We're not going to say that we can book things better. But I mean, that was just to me like, oh man, like. Like you're frustrated because you know that woman's title is not going to be defended as much now for the foreseeable future because they got the tag team titles as on there, and plus the sad thing about the tag team division is those are your three main teams, the only three teams in that division.
Yeah, it's true, and they try to bring importance to that too. But again, with the SmackDown women's title, now the Intercontinental title that will not be defended at Backlash. And you have, you know, the scenario where, like, come on, guys. I mean, the reason why you have these championships is to build the attention to not only these individuals or teams, but you want other people to be drawn to want to see it because you just don't want to have one show where the only title that's being defended off from your brand is going to be. And, you know, people say, oh, well, the tag team titles are being defended. Well, currently right now, they go back and forth. They're not just isolated to one show. The only title that's going to be defended is the Universal title. With Braun Strowman, The Miz, and John Morrison. I'm like, okay, so wait, if you're a SmackDown fan, which if that they tried to separate the brands, I'm only going to watch this for one match? Come on. There should be more talent to be used on a particular show like that.
All right, Trendsetter. So moving on, we got a backstage scene with Otis and Tucker Knight. And hey, look, Tucker Knight's sighting, which is great. And, you know, they're training for their six-man tag team match. And, you know, it's funny skit there with Otis being blindfolded and, you know, the ringing of the bell and smelling the food. And then, you know, the mistaken kiss, thinking that Tucker gave him a smooch on the mouth. But it was the lovely and beautiful Mandy Rose. And she hands him the Money in the Bank briefcase. Trendsetter, I'm going to say this to you again. You love Otis, but there's going to be some people that are like, man, they're going to hate on Otis because he's got a beautiful girl on his side. So
I'm thinking you're one of them.
I'm one of them. But Tucker, to me, I think, like we talked about in the match, and we'll get to the six-man tag team match now, like, man, Tucker Knight looks good, man. He looks like he took that time off, getting really built up, whatever like that. I mean, he's looking in top form, and you got to believe there's got to be something brewing where Tucker's going to have enough and be like, hey, man, listen, man, you kind of put this whole this team and everything to the back burner to get the girl and to go for that singles push there and become the world champion.
Yeah, it's going to have that feeling that you left me high and dry, basically, bros before you know what type of scenario, and then him going for individual glory and forgetting about him and leaving him in the back burner back in catering. Yeah, you're right. It has the same feel to it as well. Oh, what I hope that if this does end up happening, which I kind of feel it is, but again, you know, it's the WWE. It can always change. I hope they don't have it to the point where you can kind of tell it's going to happen. I mean, we know it's going to happen, hopefully, and then it's going to be at a moment where we don't expect it to happen. I don't want the foreshadowing that usually happens in scenarios where teams are like, hey, you know, you weren't there for me. What's going on? And start building up to the point where people start thinking, oh, well, those two aren't getting along. So I hope if it does happen, it's going to be at the moment we don't expect it to be. It looks like everything is fine, and then all of a sudden, boom, it hits us like right in the back of the head like a ton of bricks. And that happens, great, because I think, you know, both of them as a team are good. We saw that during the main event of SmackDown with Braun Strowman. But ultimately, if you're going to go that route, because it seems like they're really invested in Otis as an individual star, and that's the route you take, then we're going to have the classic scenario, too, where, you know, two tag team partners – One betrays the other, one backstabs the other, and all of a sudden, boom, we start a rivalry from right there. But talking about the main event, it was a six-man tag team match. I think Theodore Long was taking care of this main event, too, because he loves six-man tag team matches with Braun Strowman, Otis, Tucker, Heavy Machinery, with
He's impacted you that much.
He does. The storyline, it's terrible. But with The Miz, John Morrison, and Dolph Ziggler, what did you think about it, too? And, they kind of hinted at the fact prior to that, because Braun Strowman had a backstage segment talking about the lead up to this main event, was like, you know what, Otis, I like him, but if he wants to pull a trick again and try to take advantage of me in a very vulnerable situation, that he's going to get the hands. So is that something that, they didn't really do it in the main event in terms of teasing that too, but all three of them worked really well together, Heavy Machinery and Braun Strowman. They looked like a legit six-man tag team.
Yeah, they did. They did. And listen, this was their main event, SmackDown's main event, but it wasn't our main event.
Yeah, we know what the main event was.
We know what the freaking main event was, all right? So this is why we're talking about this one here. Again, listen, this was the main event on SmackDown because they're pushing the championship match at Backlash between Miz and Morrison against Braun Strowman, the handicap match, right? So I get why this was, their main event. But again, also too, it was a good match, entertaining match. But again, it just shows Otis's vulnerability, because at the end of the day, he's shown his weakness. Once a champion, once a character, that's 1A. What happens in with characters is that once they show them that weakness, then they can be used against them.
They can be manipulated that way.
And you saw Baron Corbin backstage talking to Mandy. Otis was having none of it. He goes backstage, starts beating up on Corbin, and that is what happens when you lose your eye on the prize, because the prize is to win that match. Your prize is to be a tag team partner, and the prize is that the championship and the Money in the Bank briefcase. But for Otis, who has shown his weakness is the beautiful and lovely Mandy Rose, and that is going to blind Otis, and that is why I don't believe he will cash in that Money in the Bank briefcase.
Why is it that love and wrestling just don't work, Jeff?
In sports, man, what do they say in boxing, right? You can't, you can't do the horizontal. Do the horizontal polka dance before a fight.
Well, I've never done polka in my life.
Weakens the knees, and so love just listen. As much as there's nothing like having a beautiful lady by your side, they also are your weakness. You know what I mean? It is the weakness, and he's shown it. He's shown he's vulnerable to anything that happens to Mandy. He's going to, at the drop of a hat, he's going to be there by her side to protect and defend the honor of, Mandy. He's shown it. He's shown the weakness, and someone's going to use it against him.
Yeah, it's just surprising. I can't think off the top of my head of a love connection that worked in professional wrestling, whether it was real or not, whether it be storyline based. I'm talking more storyline based. I can't remember the last one where it worked. They tried to do that with Seth and Becky, and then a lot of people hated that. They hated it so much. Lana and Rusev, that ended up not working out very well.
How about Mike and Maria Kanellis?
That was a failure. No? That was a failure the moment they walked out the curtain, Jeff. The song was great.
I tried.
After the promo sucked.
That song was underrated.
Yeah.
That song I could loop, and it's still a good song.
Well, you did when it first came out.
Nothing against Mike and Maria, but I just think, I don't know, it's just something that should be given more time.
I guess the only one that worked, though, was The Miz and Maurice.
Yes.
They had great chemistry.
Yes, yes, when they were together. Yes.
And so now John Morrison's filled in that role for Maurice. Both John Morrison and The Miz have a great chemistry. Yeah. And you like to think now, the way they're building it up, that there is that possible chance that we could have that first time ever a dual WWE champion in terms of a universal champion. And that's a possibility. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the route that people want to perceive that could possibly happen.
It's funny, too, though, that Morrison, The Miz, and Ziggler, who are all good friends in real life, get to the six-man tag. That had to be good for them, too.
Yeah.
And you talk about somebody that I think would strive as the champion right now. I think Dolph Ziggler would be that guy.
Really?
I really think that he would be a good
after
heel guy
after numerous opportunities of kind of showcasing himself. Like, again, hey, I'm not taking anything away from Dolph. Yes, I agree with you in terms of he's got enough talent in the ring to do that. But in terms of a character, he's kind of been lost in limbo too. We don't know what the hell's going on with him. He just, in my opinion,
seems to be a replacement
to, you know, if you don't have something here, let's just insult Dolph
Ziggler. Yeah, good old dependable Dolph. That's perfect. That's gonna be his name. Good old dependable Dolph. Because when we need something, when we need a rivalry, just boom, just put in Dolph Ziggler in there. But I could see Miz and Morrison, more Morrison at giving him a run too as a champion as well. He did it in other companies. He can do it here. So
now, run as a champion, just real quick. Do you think he has the ability of run as a champion as a universal champion, or are we going back to the scenarios where he's an Intercontinental title champion? He's already been tag team champion, or if he gets ever shift over to Raw,
if he's
the U.S. champion, is he just that mid level car type of talent?
For now, I believe he can have a run as the universal champion.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, if we don't get Morrison versus AJ Styles somewhere down the road, it'll be a crime. Because that, to me, is another match that I would love to see. I don't even know if they've ever even wrestled together.
I can't remember either.
I don't want to say yes or no here because there's people actually that will do research on stuff that I would say just to say, hey, those guys on the SmackDown interview don't know what they're talking about. So I don't know.
Who talks that way, Joe?
Oh, trust me, a lot of people.
Okay.
So I don't know, but that's another match that WWE could definitely, you know, invest in, and I would love to see. So while the match is good, Otis shows a weakness again, and we might see an Otis and Baron Corbin feud, and that might be the right guy to put against Otis that's going to, like, just show more of that weakness, which is Mandy Rose. So I think Baron Corbin is the kind of guy that's going to get a lot out of a feud like this too, so...
They basically have Braun Strowman, Otis, Heavy Machinery with Tucker Knight. They get the win in the main event. Yeah. Builds up now towards Backlash. What's going to happen to Morrison and Miz and Braun Strowman? We get that now. But let's talk about the one thing we've been teasing and been talking about and have moved on to something else.
Our main event.
Yeah. And that was for the Intercontinental Championship, a match where I said last week, you know, let's have 15 minutes of SmackDown and the rest. Just give it to AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan because that's all you need.
Easiest booked SmackDown you could ever do, honestly, right?
Definitely, without question, too. Anticipation building up for this final, you saw in the montage. You saw it in terms of, you know, the history of the Intercontinental Championship. You also saw it in terms of what happened previously, the history between AJ and Daniel Bryan leading up to this final main event caliber match that should have been on SmackDown. But again, we're not booking the show. And I have to say that, you know, the one thing Jeff had mentioned to me, too, that was really obvious, and I really agree with him, too. I mean, you had individuals in the crowd. These are, you know, trainees. They're from NXT, or they're trainees from the Performance Center there.
They're
playing the audience. Big difference when you have that in your audience as opposed to when you have an actual audience. I think this would have been an audience in there that would have been chanted, this is awesome. It just, when you have a quality match like this, now granted, I enjoyed it for the mere fact that it was pure wrestling in terms of what you want in terms of psychology and storylines built into it. But man, if you had an audience in that building, if you had an audience in an arena watching that match, they would have gone home happy. That's the kind of match, Jeff, that I always say that when you put that out there, you're giving the people their money's worth and definitely lived up to the billing.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, like, if you're not a – and you saw some of the trainees were very invested in it.
Oh, yeah.
You saw some of the – I mean, it could be, hey, let's make a reaction when we point to you guys. But, I mean, if you're not absorbing that kind of match and you're not studying to the very best to ever do it, then
– why watch it on tape when you can watch it live?
I mean, but it did –
this is how it's done, guys.
It did miss that crowd, though, that live crowd. I yelled at you. I was like, Trendsetter, it's missing a crowd.
And I was like, my name's not Trendsetter.
Yeah. It's Brian. So yeah, man, like, it definitely missed the crowd. It would have added more to it. But to me, it was one of the best matches on SmackDown this year. And, you know, two guys that are going to make that title relevant, whether if they're going to continue the feud or not. Then AJ Styles, you know, with the phenomenal forearm, beats Daniel Bryan clean. No roll-up, no distraction.
That was the biggest thing I took away from it. He beat him clean.
Yeah.
You would think some tactic was going to happen, and then it would have soured the whole match in general, but he beats him clean. What did you think of that, though? He beats him clean.
I loved it because finally they decided, hey, listen, let's do this right. Let's end this right. Let's not have this whole tournament for no reason, you know, like – put a kibosh on it or taint it because we get a roll up or we have a distraction.
That's the perfect word, I think. You just said taint it.
Yeah.
There's certain things that are built up so well,
yeah.
And they have a small thing like that, and you're like, come on.
Put the final stamp on this tournament.
Yeah.
Legitimize it, and let's have a clean win. And I'm a little surprised that AJ won because Daniel Bryan seemed more like the kind of guy as the babyface that was going to defend it a lot. And you were kind of going to see, like, I was thinking every week is going to be the open challenge.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, guys come out, whatever like that. And it would have been great. But I want to see where they go with AJ Styles. And, man, no one looks the part of an Intercontinental Champion than AJ Styles. If you saw the photos, if you saw him holding it, we were talking about the title making the man. Obviously, AJ Styles is the man that's going to make the title, and it's about freaking time that someone does that to that title, and I said Sami Zayn might have been the last guy to do it, but if they're going to put the title on AJ Styles, A, it shows me how much the company loves AJ Styles. They have treated AJ Styles with tons of respect since he's walked through that door. Maybe that whole thing that with the OC was kind of like hindered him a little bit. He made the best of it, but they've treated him as a part, and it really doesn't happen a lot because you know Vince was calling that bulldog, right? He called him that, like, you know, maybe he reminded him a lot of himself.
Yeah.
If Vince doesn't okay or doesn't like AJ Styles, AJ Styles gets lost in the fold. It's hard to say because it's AJ Styles, but the company just shows you that they love AJ Styles. And if you're going to put the definition of an Intercontinental Champion on it, and you want to compare the Savages and the Steamboats and the Shawns and the Brett, AJ Styles in that conversation. So when you look at him, that's everything you want your Intercontinental Champion to be. And I'm all for it. Let's see where it goes. Can he be the guy that legitimizes this IC title again?
Well, to answer that question, it's yes.
No.
But will WWE give him the direction and give him the significance to do that now? Because the reason why I'm somewhat, you know, kind of half and half on that is because of this, Jeff. We had AJ Styles as the WWE champion on SmackDown, the house that AJ Styles built, right? And how much was that title considered a secondary title?
Yeah.
You know, that title should have been a main event on some circumstances when the Universal title was not being defended, and unfortunately it wasn't. You had a lot of nostalgia matches put in front of the WWE championship. So my fear is that we're going to have the same scenario again. You have all this great work from a guy like AJ. He's now literally, you know, he'll be the first one to tell you he's not in his prime anymore, but still a lot better than most people in their prime. And you know how much more he has left to go. You know, can we make this last, I don't say last run, but last scenario where we don't know how much longer AJ is going to keep doing this. Can we make it mean something? Can we put that stamp of significance to the point you just said, too? You know, he's garnered a lot of respect from WWE, from Vince. But you know what, guys? He didn't just get that walking in the door. He had to earn that, and he proved that every single night in terms of not just being a performer, but being a professional as well. And that's why he's garnered the opportunities he's gotten. Well-deserved, because more importantly, he earned it. And I'll never forget, guys, one time I met AJ Styles in Barclays Center for SummerSlam. I think it was the same time Jeff and I were talking about earlier on the show. Got an autograph from him. And it's so weird. We had to go to Brooklyn, come back, go back home because we lived in Jersey, and come back to Brooklyn later on in the evening, which was ridiculous, just to get an autograph from AJ Styles. That's how much I wanted to meet him and get an autograph from him. And this is, you know, prior to anything of the success he's had so far. I went up to him and wanted to thank him. And he was like, oh, thank you, appreciate it. I was like, you know what, AJ? A lot of people say and chant you deserve it, but you know what? More importantly, you've earned it. And he looked at me with that southern twang. He's like, you know, I like that. That's good. And I was like, well, thank you.
This is your week to make the AJ Styles.
Yeah, this is my week to do it, though. I thought I did a pretty good job there. He's like, I like that.
Well, damn,
and,
I like that. I like that.
Yeah,
I
really, and then really Jeff and I walk over as we're fanboying. We scream 1, 2, 3. Something we hate John Cena, whatever.
Yeah. Beat up John Cena.
Beat up John Cena. There you go. That was the one. He liked it. But right,
what I will never forget, Trendsetter, is being in Dallas where I believe AJ Styles won the opportunity to face the WWE champion, right? The Universal
Yeah, he
champion.
Just, the day before, had his first WrestleMania.
He lost
against
to Jericho.
Chris Jericho. Lost to Jericho.
Was,
we're like, oh.
I was like, oh, it doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah, Jericho. You know, the guy that never wins Mania is Jericho.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not fair. There's no way to push AJ Styles. Oh, Vince is going to do. What does he do? He wins that, and everybody in the audience respected the hell out of that guy, stood up and gave him a standing ovation. And
because the main event was for the number one contendership
for
the WWE Championship.
And AJ Styles became the number one contender. And ever since then, it's just been, you know, AJ Styles is in that category of main event status. And, yes, you know, the respect from the crowd, you know, on AJ Styles. They knew his history. They knew him when he was in TNA. They knew the New Japan. They knew all that stuff. They knew the Ring of Honor stuff. And, you know, just the respect that the company has for AJ. So I'm singing the praises of AJ. I don't think anybody will fight me on that. Mm-hmm. But wow, I mean, it's good to see it. We'll see where it goes. Hey, they could be idiots and take the belt off of them next week, whatever. But yeah, you know what? For now, I'm gonna hold that hope. And if AJ or Daniel Bryan end up having the run with it, or it's somebody else, you know, for at least today, I'm gonna say, hey, they did a great job with this tournament. And to me, it was a win-win situation. Either guy in this with the title would have been a win-win.
Yeah, and especially, too, they build it up as well, too, for the mere fact that the Intercontinental Championship was the title that AJ had not won yet in WWE. So it was a great marketing tool in that sense to have that actually happen on SmackDown. But real quick, before we wrap up the show, Jeff, you just mentioned before, you know, again, you know, we're singing AJ's praises. You know, Daniel Bryan did a phenomenal job, pun intended here, in that match as well. But we've known Daniel Bryan's history prior to this. We know what happened at WrestleMania 31. He wanted to win the Intercontinental title, which he did in that ladder match, to kind of defend it and kind of make it have that relevancy that it once had. Here's another opportunity, though, where Daniel Bryan and AJ can actually do it together. Do you think that continues? Would you want to see them again continually battle for the Intercontinental title? Or, if not, is there anybody right now on the roster? You just mentioned a Morrison, too, but let's exclude him because that would be also a great match as well. Is there anybody else on this roster currently right now that you could see contend with AJ for the IC title to make it again, keep the relevancy going, keep that momentum going from what they built up to this main event to, you know, what we hope for it to be in the future?
Well, I mean, I would say Cesaro and Nakamura, but they got them pigeonholed in the tag team division.
Yeah.
So a couple of names comes to mind. I would say that I would maybe take a Drew Gulak. I think maybe he's going to make a claim that since he pinned AJ Styles, he should get a shot. I wouldn't mind to see that. I think he's a good wrestler. Another name to it. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Jeff Hardy in the mix there. You know, there's a lot of options too.
What about a Shorty G?
Shorty G would
a Chad Gable. I'll call him Chad Gable, not Shorty G.
Hell yeah. You know, listen, AJ is not selfish, man. He's about making that star. You know what I mean? If you can go in the ring and you can go with AJ, it's going to really do a lot for your career. So I think maybe it's AJ going with somebody and then having that person, that next chosen guy, beat AJ, and that's how they can make a star. So, you know, any of those guys would be a great thing. And it's a great Twitter question, too. So we might actually post that on Twitter and be like, who should be the next person to vie for AJ Styles' Intercontinental Championship, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Daniel Bryan, or we can go Shorty G. We can go with Drew Gulak. So, you know, but it needs to be defended every week on SmackDown. It should be that secondary title. It should be that main event, the workhorse kind of guy.
Because we know the Universal title is not going to be defended. We know the Universal title will have its own individual storyline as it is towards Backlash. But sometimes that's not for everybody. If you want to see in terms of work and storylines to be invested in, you'd want it to be that title.
Yep. So, guys, listen, you can follow us on all our podcasts, on all podcast platforms at High Spot Podcast. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. I want to thank everyone here on the Unofficial WWE Podcast. Matt, who reviews Raw, does Wrestling Nostalgia, Saturday Night Week in Review, with a lot of great hosts like Mary Grader, Ashley Mann, Anthony DeMarco. You got the AEW Review with Jeff Johnson, and the NXT Review with Zach Smith. They do a tremendous job with all those aspects of WWE and AEW. Trendsetter, another great show. Real quick, Backlash this Sunday. Are you going to watch it?
Yes, I am going to watch it because we need to talk about it.
And what SmackDown match is going to be the most appealing to you?
Well, if the Intercontinental title was on the line, it would have been that, which would have made sense. But I'd probably be more interested, not necessarily in the Universal title, Granted, that has an interesting dynamic behind it with Miz and Morrison, but I'm actually kind of interested to see where these. Now, again, it's not a SmackDown Championship, but I'm pretty interested to see where they do what direction they plan on going with the Women's Tag Team Championships.
Yeah. So again,
what about you?
I'm looking forward to Jeff Hardy and Sheamus.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to see both these guys have a lot to lose here as far as like. You know, where they're going to actually be put in their next feud or they're going to continue this. But real quick, Jeff Hardy or Sheamus?
I got Jeff Hardy winning this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jeff Hardy. Braun Strowman versus The Miz and John Morrison. Who leaves there as the Universal Champion?
Braun will retain it, and Miz and Morrison are going to get those hands and an ass whooping.
Yeah, and if you would ask me last week, I would have said The Miz and Morrison haven't shot. But I really think we're going to see The Fiend appear at Backlash and make that match there between Braun and The Fiend. And then the Iconics, Bayley and Sasha versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross in a triple threat for the women's tag team titles. Who you got in this one, Trendsetter?
As much as that title, those championships can kind of flip-flop back and forth and kind of use like a hot potato type of scenario, I see Bayley and Sasha retaining.
Yeah, I mean, so do I. Wow, we agree on all the matches.
That's never a good thing.
That's
which you definitely know that means none of them are going to go out the way we think they're going to
so,
go.
So, you know, be careful, you know, how you're going to bet on these guys because, you know, whoever bets on these. But, yeah, so be careful with that. But, hey, listen, Backlash is this Sunday, man. Any kind of wrestling is good to watch on the WWE Network. So, again, Trendsetter, another great week here on HSP SmackDown Review. We want to thank all the fans, all the great comments that we've been hearing about the show. I hope you enjoy it, guys, because, honestly, you know, we're not trying to be like that show where we're, you know, trying to, you know, critique everything. But when we see something that needs to be critiqued, we'll do it.
We definitely will. We won't hold back. Here on the HSP SmackDown Review, we are the Jersey Wrecking Crew for my tag team partner, the Scoundrel Jeff Martin. I am the Trendsetter Brian Berg. And thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. We'll be back next week to review everything you want in the world of SmackDown and review a little bit of Backlash too. So looking forward to it, guys. Make sure you listen to us on all our social media platforms as well for the High Spot Podcast. Check out our YouTube channel. Give us a like and subscribe. Check us out also on Apple Podcasts. And remember, we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you, the crew. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.